Oh, good morning, strangers. Let's pray. Father, I come before you this morning. Thank you for the brothers and sisters here that are pressing on with you and just seeing their faces afresh this morning. Thank you for your love. Thank you for your kindness. Thank you for your son, Jesus. I pray this morning you would speak to us as you already have and just set our hearts on fire with eternal purpose. In Jesus' name, amen. I didn't call you strangers just for the sake of being strange, but the Bible calls us strangers, and I'm going to be talking a bit about down that line this morning. So, there's a book in the Bible that's addressed to strangers, and you probably all read it. Who knows which one that is? I won't be teaching out of that book, but it is interesting that it's addressed to strangers. First Peter, verse 1. Peter, an apostle of Jesus Christ, to the strangers scattered throughout Pontus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Asia, and Bithynia. And then if you turn over to chapter 2, verse 11, it says, "Dearly beloved, I beseech you, as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul." So, my text this morning is Hebrews 13, 9, starting in verse 9. We'll read a few verses there. Hebrews 13, 9 through 16. "Be not carried about with diverse and strange doctrines, for it is a good thing that the heart be established with grace, not with meats, which have not profited them that have been occupied therein. We have an altar whereof they have no right to eat, which serve the tabernacle. For the bodies of those beasts whose blood is brought into the sanctuary by the high priest for sin are burned without the camp. Wherefore Jesus also, that he might sanctify the people with his own blood, suffered without the gate. Let us go forth therefore unto him without the camp, bearing his reproach. For here we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come. By him therefore let us offer the sacrifice of praise to God continually, that is, the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name. But to do good and to communicate, forget not, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased." When I read a passage, I often find myself looking for the motivations in the passage. What are the motivations? Well, there's more than one motivation in what I just read in there. But the one that I want to zero in on is verse 14. "For here have we no continuing city, but we seek one to come." And the title of my sermon is "In Search of a City, the Christian's Motivation." What could cause someone to go outside the camp and suffer along with Christ, to give themselves wholeheartedly to Christ, to do it with, well, verse 15 talks about praise continually, and to be giving ourselves to do good and communicate continually? What could motivate us to have that kind of life? And this is a key motivation to the Christian's life. "For here have we no continuing city, but we seek one to come." If you turn back the pages to chapter 11, we have the faith chapter. Everybody knows this is the faith chapter, although it's like the chapter of works, all the works that they did. But what was their motivation? And starting in verse 11, starting in verse 8 to verse 16. By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed. And he went out, not knowing whither he went. By faith, he sojourned in the land of promise, as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Through faith also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed, and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Therefore sprang there even of one, and him as good as dead, so many as the stars of the sky in multitude, and as the sand which is by the seashore innumerable. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. And truly, if they had been mindful of that country from whence they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. But now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly. Wherefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he hath prepared for them a city. God is not ashamed to be called their God. There are certain things, if we do, God is proud. He's excited. Look at my children. God is well pleased. And in this passage, we have that same motivation. We have Abraham leaving a place, a land, going to a promised land and dwelling in it as though he was a stranger, as well as his sons, Isaac and Jacob. And it says, why? For he looked for a city. For he looked for a city. There is the motivation. Abraham looking for a city, which hath foundations, whose builder and maker is God. If you look at verse 13, it says, these all died in faith, and there was a list. Not having received the promise, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them, and embraced them. The other day I was talking to a neighbor of mine, and he's a Christian, and he's really an evangelist at heart. And he told me he was running this little Bible camp, was overseeing it, and one of the young men looked at him and said, you really believe what you're talking about. It says these people were persuaded. Do you really believe? Do you really, really believe? Well, there's ways in which that'll affect you. You will embrace, if you really see with spiritual eyes God's promises, you'll embrace them. And there's going to be a confession that will take place. Not just with your mouth, but the way you live, people will know that this is the case. It says they confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a country. They could have went back to their old country, it says. They had been mindful, they could have went back to their old country. They had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better country, that is in heavenly. Wherefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God. And it's another motivation to know when God's not ashamed of something. He's excited and he's prepared for them a city. If you look at a verse in Romans 4, 11 and 12, I'll just read this. This is speaking about how faith is, righteousness is through faith. And it talks about Abraham. And it says, and he received the sign of circumcision, a seal of the righteousness of the faith which he had yet being uncircumcised, that he might be the father of all them that believe, though they be not circumcised, that the righteousness might be imputed unto them also, and the father of circumcision to them who are not of the circumcision only, but who also walk in the steps of that faith of our father Abraham, which he had being yet uncircumcised. I find it amongst the Anabaptists, there is a, I'm not from that background, although I grew up in it. My family lineage doesn't go back there, but there's this heritage that is inherited by many that they want to live, they want to uphold and live to. Well, there's a heritage that goes back further. It goes back clear to Father Abraham. And you can be a son of Father Abraham if you walk in his steps. If you walk in his steps of faith. Not to follow the mistakes he made, but the steps of faith that he made. And what was his motivation that drove those steps? He was looking for something. He was looking for a city. This morning, that's when try to catch our attention, to get us to look and to walk in those steps. So that you can be a son of Father Abraham. And inherit all the promises that he was also promised. The reason why we have Hebrews 11, the reason why we have these accounts is to look at their lives and pattern our lives. And also, what was Christ's motivation? That's the ultimate pattern. And we see Christ also looking for something beyond this life that motivated and drove him. Hebrews 12:2, it says, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. He looked beyond. He looked beyond. And even Abraham looked beyond the earthly promises. And for me, that's symbolic of Canaan land. It's symbolic of what God would like to do in our lives here on this earth. Battles to be fought and to be won, and giants to conquer, and there's all these promises that are given here. But that isn't our primary motivation. Our primary motivation goes beyond the spiritual victories we get on this side of eternity and onto eternity, and that's what motivates us, and that's what drives us forward, and that's also what gives us victory on this earth while we're walking. So, back into the Hebrews 13, it's verse 14. For here we have no continuing city. And as I was reading that and meditating on that particular verse, I think first of the first part, and I don't like to just preach about the positives, but we seek one to come. But starting with the beginning, here we have no continuing city. And How many can really say here we have no continuing city from our hearts? We like to have it in America. Here we have a continuing city and we seek one to come. We like to have the best of both worlds. Now really, I want you to think about that in your heart as you look at that verse. Can you really say here we have no continuing city from your heart? Can you really say that? Where is your heart this morning? And as I thought about that, I thought about two men who were just men, who are righteous men, who started out on the same pilgrimage, Lot and Abraham. And I look at Lot. I think we should read some of his life, but to just summarize it a little bit, Lot also was seeking a city to come. He was. But Lot wanted to have something on this earth too. And was motivated by that. And I believe Lot is in heaven. And I believe the Lord actually used Lot and delivered him. And despite the wreck of it. But I hope none of you do what Lot did. And make a mistake out of your life. But the encouraging part is Jesus was a descendant of Ruth the Moabitess, who came out of Lot's incestuous relationship. So Lot, God redeemed even the crazy stuff that happened in Lot's life. But I want to look back at the story of Lot. And if you look at Genesis 12, 1 through 5. Now the Lord had said unto Abraham, get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, unto a land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee, and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee. And in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. And Abram took Sarai his wife, and Lot his brother's son, and all their substance that they had gathered, and the souls that they had gotten in Haran, and they went forth into the land of Canaan, and into the land of Canaan they came. So here you see two men side by side setting out. Abram takes his family, and Lot comes with him. If you turn over to chapter 13, this is just a little bit in between. Abram goes into Egypt. Things don't go over too well. The king of Egypt takes Sarai, his wife. God meets him in a dream. King of Egypt sends Abram away. That's a summary of it. And he goes out of Egypt in verse 13. And Abram went up out of Egypt, chapter 13, verse 1. Abram went up out of Egypt, he and his wife, and all that he had, and Lot with him, into the south. And Abram was very rich in cattle, in silver, and in gold. And he went on his journeys from the south, even to Bethel, unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Hai, and the place of the altar which he made there at the first, where Abram, and there Abram called on the name of the Lord. So we see it's possible to have quite a lot of riches and yet be seeking a kingdom to come. So I don't want to make it sound like this morning you've got to be poor and live in a 12 by 24 shack. However, Abraham lived in a tent. He did. He lived all his life in a tent. But his heart, so we're looking at his heart. And Lot also went, which went with him, had flocks and herds and tents. And Lot also had quite a lot. And the land was not able to bear them, and that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. And there was a strife between the herdmen of Abram's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle. And the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelled then in the land. And Abram said unto Lot, let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for they be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou wilt depart to the right hand, I will go to the left. And Lot lift up his eyes, and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere. And before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as a garden of the Lord, like unto the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves one from another. And Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent toward Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. So here conflict breaks out, and again you see Abram actually making decisions based on the glory of God. And he says, it's not going to be good for us, we're brethren, we shouldn't be fighting. And he gives Lot the opportunity to choose first. But look at the way which Lot chooses. This is really important. And I want you to ask yourself, how do you choose? Lot lift up his eyes and looked. That's what he did. He looked. And he chose based on his five senses. How do you choose? Lot didn't, there's no record that Lot took time to inquire of the Lord and said, Lord, what will you, what's your desire for me here? No, he just chose, and that looked good. It said it looked like the Garden of Eden. There was, it was so much, tremendously, probably lush grass, waist high everywhere. I mean, what, who wouldn't want to feed their flocks in that? God's blessed this place, just like he blessed the Garden of Eden. I'm going that way. But, the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners exceedingly. Lot pitched his tent towards Sodom, despite the fact that there were some things wrong there, that he shouldn't be headed that direction and pitch his tent that direction. But Lot, anyways, goes that way. And another summary, a war takes place and Lot is carried away captive and Abram rescues Lot. But Lot seems to not heed the wake-up call and remains in Sodom. And here we have Lot pitching his tent toward Sodom. But the story goes further. And a lot transpires, and we turn over to Genesis 19. And Abraham had just been communicating with God, and he had actually, God had met with him in chapter 18. And God had made known to him his intentions to come down and destroy Sodom and Gomorrah. And Abraham intercedes on behalf of Sodom, and he whittles it down to if there's 10 people. And I wonder sometimes, the Bible doesn't say it, but I wonder sometimes how many family members Abraham had. Maybe Lot had. Maybe Abraham figured Lot would, and his wife and his few children and their spouses and maybe a few of his servants would be able to prevent the destruction of Sodom. And he was concerned about Lot down in Sodom. And are you going to destroy it for 10 people? He got it down to a number maybe he thought that would work. But these angels come down into Sodom. And starting in 19 verse 1. And there came two angels to Sodom at even. And Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. And Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them. And he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. And he said, behold now, my lords, turn in, I pray you, into your servant's house. And tarry all night, and wash your feet. And ye shall rise up early and go on your ways. And they said, nay, but we will abide in the street all night. And he pressed upon them greatly, and they turned in unto him, and entered into his house. And he made them a feast, and did bake unleavened bread, and they did eat. But before they lay down, the men of the city, even the men of Sodom, compassed the house round both old and young, all the people from every quarter. And they called unto Lot, and said unto him, where are the men which came into thee this night? Bring them out unto us, that we may know them. And Lot went out at the door unto them, and shut the door after him, and said, I pray you, brethren, do not so wickedly. Behold now, I have two daughters which have not known a man. Let me, I pray you, bring them out unto you, and do you to them as is good in your eyes. Only unto these men do nothing, for therefore came they under the shadow of my roof. And they said, stand back. And they said again, this one fellow came in to sojourn, and he will needs be a judge. Now will we deal worse with thee than with them. And they pressed sore upon the man, even Lot, and came near to break the door. The men of Sodom actually understood something about Lot. And I wonder if Lot understood it. He said, these men, this man came in to sojourn. What does that mean, to sojourn? They actually understood that Lot did not belong there permanently. But Lot had quite settled in to that city. And he had now left his tent, and it says, I brought these men under my roof. There was a door, there was a house, and Lot had settled into the city. But the men understood something. Sometimes the world knows more about us than we actually are living up to. They understood that Lot was a sojourner. He was a stranger, but he was not living as a stranger in this place to a large degree. Lot obviously had some righteousness. He didn't want to see what happened to these men. He was willing to allow things to happen to his daughters, unfortunately, but he wanted to prevent them from sinning, and maybe he even knew there was something very special about these men, and he brings them into his house. But, you know, sometimes we think we can be at ease in the world and we can be at peace with the world. But that will only last for so long, and then we get the worst end of both sticks. The world will turn on you, you won't strike up a peace deal. As long as you're trying to have one foot in the door with God and one foot in the world, you're going to get the worst end of both. You may as well pick your choice. Are you going to go all in with the Lord, or are you going to go all in with the world? Because that person halfway in between gets the miseries of both ends and loses a lot of joy and a lot. And so let's look at this. Lot pulls these men. These men come after him. It says, these men of the city come after him. Verse 10, the men that are with Lot, but the men put forth their hand. They pulled Lot into the house. See, he went from a tent to a house. It's not a sermon about whether you got to live in tents or houses. Live in a house in New Brunswick, it'd be hard in a tent. But there's spiritual lessons here. Lot really was settling down and getting comfort in Sodom. He had made this his abode. And they smote the men that were at the door of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves to find the door. And the men said unto Lot, hast thou here any besides sons-in-laws and thy sons and thy daughters, and whatsoever thou hast in the city, bring them out of this place, for we will destroy this place, because the cry of them is waxing great before the face of the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it. And Lot went out and spake unto his sons-in-law, which married his daughters, and said, up, get you out of this place, for the Lord will destroy the city. But he seemed as one that mocked unto his sons-in-law. Finally, Lot is now waking up to realize judgment's coming. I better do something. I better go and tell my sons-in-law, come out of this place, come out of this place. But what happened to you, Lot? You all of a sudden got religious, did you? Ha ha. You think God's really going to judge this place? What's wrong with you? And so Lot, because he had not lived for eternal values, he had not set his heart like that, his sons-in-law didn't even take him seriously. Just, what are you? And so, verse 15, and when the morning arose, then the angels hastened Lot, saying, arise, take thy wife and thy two daughters which are here, lest thou be consumed in the iniquity of the city. And I want you to think about this. These men came in. Lot had just observed the men of the city smitten with blindness, not able to find his door. He's told to tell his sons-in-law to flee. The angels tell him, get out of this place. In the morning they tell him, get out of this place as you're consumed in iniquity. And yet Lot is lingering. Look at verse 16. And while he lingered. Sometimes we think, oh, we would not be like that. But really, until that test has come, we don't realize how attached we become to this earth, how attached we become to this, to what we should not be attached to. And when God says, these angels say, get out of there, Lot is lingering. While he lingered, the men laid hold upon his hand and upon the hand of his wife and upon the hand of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful unto him. And they brought him forth and set him without the city. So Lot is literally drug out of that city by his hands. That's how what it took for God to get him out of Sodom. That's how much he had grown to love that place. He could not truly say, I have no continuing city here. He had settled down. And then they say, verse 17, it came to pass when they had brought them forth abroad that he said, escape for thy life. Look not behind thee, neither stay thou in all thy plain. Escape to the mountain, lest thou be consumed. Flee, get out of here, get over to the mountain, lest you're consumed. And Lot said unto them, oh, not so, my lord. Behold now, thy servant hath found grace in thy sight, and thou hast magnified thy mercy, which thou hast showed unto me in saving my life. And I cannot escape to the mountain, lest some evil take me, and I die. Behold now, this city is near to flee unto. And it is a little one. Oh, let me escape thither. Is it not a little one, and my soul shall live? I see here again Lot hanging on. He realizes Sodom's in trouble, but here's a little city. I flee over there. Just let me have a little bit of the ease, not to the mountain. Something's going to happen to me over there. And God actually permits it in his sovereignty. It wasn't what his desire was. Sometimes God permits us to do things that aren't, he'll overlook it, but it wasn't what pleased him the most. And Lot flees to that city. So verse 21, and he said, see, I have accepted thee concerning this thing also, and I will not overthrow the city for which thou hast spoken. Haste thee and escape thither, for I cannot do anything till thou become thither. Therefore the name of the city was called Zoar. The sun was risen upon the earth when Lot entered into Zoar. Then the Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah, brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities and of all the plain and all the inhabitants of the cities and that which grew upon the ground. But his wife looked back from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. And Lot lost his own wife. She looked back, and we're told in Luke chapter 17, verse 32, we're told, remember Lot's wife. God had been so merciful, he had spared them to this place, and he gave them one commandment, don't look back. Don't look back. But her heart was still attached, and she turned around, and she looked back, and that was the end of it right there. For her. Where's your heart this morning? Do you have a continuing city on this earth? Or can you truly say, here I have no continuing city? Do you want to be saved like Lot was saved? Is that how you want to get into heaven? Do you want to... The Lord was merciful. The Lord actually wasn't merciful to his wife. He lost his children. Two of his daughters survived that. They seemed to be pretty desperate. Do things that are very displeasing to the Lord. Is that how you want to come into heaven? Is that how you want to get there? I hope not. And I trust not. Sometimes we look at this life and we think, well, the main thing is I got to get into heaven. That's not the only thing. I want to get there with flying colors. I want to get there having God as just having that central, not trying to dip my foot and dabble my foot in this, on this world, into the things of this world, and getting as much enjoyment in your best life now. Your best life now. But that's the American mentality. Best life now. But that's not necessarily God's will. And actually, God might very well tell you to lay some very things that you would really enjoy having aside. Abraham was told to leave his home country. Lot left his home country. Here we have no continuing city. My being an ancestor in the family, he was worked close with William Booth. And he wrote a song, and a verse of it comes to my mind. It says, no home on earth have I, no nation owns my soul. My dwelling place is the Most High, I'm under his control. It's by George Railton. Can you really say, I have no home on earth, I have no city on earth? So that's the first part. But that would be just a vacuum. Would it not be just a vacuum if it's like, I have no city on earth? That's all it was? Imagine saving up for something big, some big investment you're going to make. And the only part you had was, I'm not spending the money on this and I'm not spending the money on that. What would that be? I know of somebody that's what he does. He just doesn't spend the money on this. He doesn't spend the money on that. He doesn't even spend it on alms. It just just lives in a little trailer home, and he stacked up quite a bit of money, and he's a miserable person. He's not looking for some, he doesn't have children to pass this down to. He's just holding on to that money. And the goal of this is not just to make you a miserable Christian. I can't have a city on earth. I can't have a treasure on earth. The Bible says that. Don't have your treasure on earth. Don't. Well, maybe we should read that. That's in Matthew chapter 6. Verse 19 through 23. Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. But if thine eye be evil, thy whole body shall be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in thee be darkness, how great is that darkness? And I think if many of us are being honest, it would feel nicer if that said it like this. Don't lay up only for yourselves treasures upon earth, but lay up also for yourselves treasures in heaven. But it doesn't say that. And that's the way we like to read that. We like to have the treasures of this earth, and we like to lay it up. Feels good. Stocking it up. But it says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures upon earth. Period. And then, what you're to do, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. You cannot serve two masters. Jesus makes that very clear. In verse 24, no man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. There's a picture in this passage of the light of the body. It's the eye. And if your eye is single, your whole body is full of light. But if your eye is evil, your whole body is full of darkness. When you have that single focus in God's kingdom, full of light. But if you have that evil eye, which is more of an unstable eye, there's just a darkness. And you're trying to get both worlds in. For here we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come. In search of a city. Are you seeking for a city? Are you looking for a city? First Peter 1, 3 and 4. Yes, I did have a passage there. First Peter 1, 3 and 4. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, which according to his abundant mercy hath begotten us again unto a lively hope by the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled, and that fadeth not away, reserved in heaven for you. What has he begotten us to? A lively hope by the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. Whenever you think about the resurrection of Jesus Christ, that reminds us of our resurrection. It's a lot about the resurrection of Jesus Christ. It impacts our life. But the final impact is our resurrection and a lively hope where an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled and that fades not away. It's not going to fade away. It's not going to disappear. It's forever and ever, and it's reserved in heaven. And that should motivate us. That should inspire us. That should drive us forward. And cause us to press forward in the will of the Lord. Whatever it is, Lord, I want to take that next step. I want to do your will. If you look at 2 Peter chapter 3, starting in verse 10. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in the which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with the fervent heat. The earth also and the works that are therein shall be burned up. Seeing then that all these things shall be dissolved, what manner of persons ought ye to be in all holy conversation and godliness, looking for and hasting unto the coming of the day of God, wherein the heavens being on fire shall be dissolved, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat. All these things around us are going to be dissolved. And it says we're looking for and hasting the day of God, wherein all these things will happen. But that's not all that we're looking for. Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for new heavens and a new earth wherein dwelleth righteousness. Wherefore, beloved, seeing that ye look for such things, be diligent that ye may be found of him in peace, without spot, and blameless. You see what that does for us? When you're looking for these things, it creates a diligence in you. Do you really believe? Do you really believe that this is all going to be dissolved around you and it's all going to burn up? But there's an eternal reward. If I was to tell you this morning that what you did in the next 24 hours of your life would impact your life for 1,000 years to come, whether what kind of house you lived in, whether it was in Siberia or it was in a nice beach, looking over the beach, and size of property, everything. If I was to tell you what you did in the next 24 hours of your life would impact 1,000 years to come, and that was a true promise that I could fulfill, how would you live that next 24 hours of your life? How would you live it? Would you just be like, huh, oh, that's nice. At least I'm going to get a house for 1,000 years. And just kind of sit down, relax. I'll do a good thing here and there. Nice thing. Or would you be like, hey, I'm going to take these 24 hours seriously. There's an eternal reward for me. I'm going to live it out. And I'm looking forward to that 1,000 years that I get to live. Well, what is your life? It is even a vapor. But it's a vapor with eternal consequences. And when you, the way you live out that vapor will have eternal consequences. It's hard for us to wrap our minds around that. But I've heard this illustration before. If there was a bird that came every 1,000 years and took a grain of sand from the Sahara Desert and carried it out to outer space and dropped it somewhere out there and came back every 1,000 years and carried another grain. When he was done taking the whole desert away, eternity has still just begun. Brothers and sisters, what are you living for? What are you searching for? What's motivating you? What's driving you? I just want to encourage you this morning. Are you willing? Are you looking for that city whose maker and builder is God, which hath foundations? Are you looking for that? Is that driving you and moving you forward and causing you to get outside of your comfort zone, whatever it is, to go on with the Lord? Please, please do. Please live like that. God bless you.